Welcome to Starfleet Universe On Call. I am Paul Franz, owner of Franz Games. I run SAP Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just a reminder how to join us for a talk guest every Thursday night starting at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either join us to the phone, just dial 605-562-0444. Just follow the directions. The call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web. Just go to the talk's website at www.talkshoe.com and search for call ID 17702. And remember to use the Chrome browser, because they might have changed things, but I have not heard anything from them, and I have not tested any other browser as of late. And if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. That's sfuoncall at gmail.com. Also, if you need to reach me via Skype, my Skype ID is FranzGames. FranzGames. And of course, you can follow me on the Twitters. The podcast account, which announces this podcast, is SFU On Call. SFUONCAL. And of course, my personal account is Paul Franz on Twitter. You can find me at twitter.com/PaulFranz. PAULFRANZ. And just a reminder that you'll find things that are very Catholic and, of course, very technology focused. And of course, I have the last accounts of Twitter that I have. Well, actually, I have a couple more, but they don't need to know about those. And that is Franz Games, FranzGames. And of course, this lovely talkcast gets turned to a podcast available on iTunes and various other feeds around the net, including one at sfuoncall.com. Some quick news from ADB this week. This week began with a meeting which Steve Cole announced they felt much better, still not 100%, and then the company would spend the week catching up on stuff that never got done, because Lord knows, if you've been watching, following the discussion board, you'll notice that Steve Cole this past week laid out his medical issues, let's put it that way, of the past few years and why things have been really sucking up. And hopefully with his the surgery that he had, things will be much, much better. Also, in a special press release on March 9th, he announced that he was going to end wholesaler distribution in the U.S. as the wholesalers were doing basically A to B more harm than good. I'm not exactly sure why, but it's good. I'm assuming that there was an issue there. But anyhow, moving onward to Steve Cole. Actually, did work on Capstone in the 53, the blogs, artwork for the Gorn Master Starship book. 60 ships were sent to Petrick. That's a lot of ships. Obviously, these are Gorn, so somebody tells me some of the starships weren't that made of modifications. A little tweak here, a little tweak there, but still a lot of manual work. They worked on Shapeways and, of course, QDK number 159, and that special price release that I had previously announced. And also the Jay's Trading Game that was mentioned a couple podcasts, actually over a month ago now, where Steve Cole actually stopped in for a bit. And I can't wait to have that available, because even if I wasn't getting a free copy, I would be buying it, to be honest. The only reason I'm getting free copies is because Steve Cole has been being very generous about that. Steve Petrick was busy working on SAP updates, also quality control, and also the Gorn Master Starship book. Gene was busy working on Gerber's Prime Directive Revision, which is always good to see, and also managing the page on Facebook, which there's using lots of traffic with over 4,075 friends, and managing the Twitter feed, which has over 286 followers, including myself. Big surprise. Also been keeping the spam assault down as much as possible on the BBS. Moving onward and forward to the SAP Online tournaments, unfortunately, there hasn't been any progress in either the Masters 2018 tournament, 2018. This is 2019. People, let's get going. Five-round two games have been played. So we got three more to get played before we can get to round three, which that would be a semifinal round. Took me a moment to calculate that out. Take care of that. 48. That one. No, actually, it would be the quarterlies. Sorry. Rat 48 is there. I have one game to play on the semifinal round, which is Devil versus Grimm. Saw that Majid, the call sign Devil, he is read up, so he's ready to play. Hopefully, they can find some time relatively quickly. And hopefully, in a way, I'm hoping Majid beats Grimm just because of I really wouldn't want Kingzilla to have to play another Hydran Civil War. Moving on and forward to the library report. I'm sorry I did not get around to processing the 10 updates. Sorry, the 10 conversions. I think they're conversions from Frank. There were 10 of them, which I'm slacking. Sorry. So there was no library progress. We're still at completed being 2,444 and yet to be converted 881 with percent complete at 73.5%. And with that, that is the news for this week. And it's me, yes, the one, the only Paul Friends, welcoming you to Starfleet Universe On Call. And tonight, we've got me, we got Dave, and you never know, Russ might show up, and maybe even you. Actually, if you show up now and listen to the podcast after the fact, then it's already done with. So, whatever. Moving onward. I figure since I did not complete, I think get on to the second topic for last evening. Last week, we talked about the Andromedans quite a bit. I figure we would move forward to the second topic that I had planned for last week, which is talking about turning Federation Fed cruiser tactics. And I guess that might be kind of short, and so I might have to move onward and forward to a different ship and probably talk about tactics for another one. And one I'm definitely going to be talking about is Hydrans. Well, I might talk about Hydrans a little bit because Lord knows we've got a Hydran duel in Rat 48, and we might even have another Hydran duel as the finals, which would be interesting. But anyhow, given that, what we're going to start off with is the Federation Tournament Cruiser and tactics related to it. Now, obviously, here's the one thing that always keep in mind. This is tournament. Since it's tournament, one of those things that means is that you have to deal with the tournament wall. The tournament wall changes things a lot. The main reason is because of normal fleet battles, you don't have walls. What you have usually is you have a limited floating map where you can go so many boards one way or boards the other way. The idea being that there's only so much the defender can back up before it's just too late. And usually open space battles, for most part, are delaying tactics. The idea is to delay a fleet far enough out from the planet that, anything that's happening, like having people escape, civilians can leave the planet. So it's just a delaying action in that category. Or it actually is centered around a planet, so that you might still have a floating board, but the planet cannot ever go off the board. So it makes it, you know, basically a viewport which is centered around the planet. And as soon as you go past that distance, usually at that point, that ship is considered disengaged. So, that's one thing to always keep in mind whenever you talk about tournament tactics, because of that's a big thing. And obviously, another big thing which helps the Federation up quite a bit, and hampers it in certain cases because of, and that is EW, because the photons are really, really affected by EW. They really are, and that's why, in my mind, the Federation is one of those few times that you, and this might, anyone's played tournament, this will not sound strange, but one of those things that you might do if you're playing against a Federation is you might actually charge a Wild Weasel for an opponent which does not have any seeking weapons except for suicide shells. In which case, in most cases, you're not going to try to use a Wild Weasel against a suicide shell. It's kind of goofy. It could happen that you use it for a knife fight. But that's the only time I could ever imagine you ever doing that. But anyhow. And the reason being is that you use the person would use a Wild Weasel against the Federation because of it would really offset any damage that the photons could do. So, which brings us back to tactics as a Federation. And that is, obviously, you want to avoid EW as much as possible. And we're fortunate as Fed players. Well, in this case, I'm putting on that hat as being a Fed player. That's one of those benefits of the tournament environment, in that there's only two times you can EW shift. And both of them require that the opponent give up a lot of speed, period. Whether there's, obviously there is the Wild Weasel. That's the obvious one. The second one is, of course, the cloak. And the cloak is such that you actually will have to, such that that's a lot of power. And obviously, for any time that a ship goes under cloak, whether it's Orion or Romulan, doesn't matter. The one thing you always are thinking about in those two categories, if you use a cloaking device, you have to figure out, or at least you have to have a plan for getting out of the cloak. Why? Because of plain and simple, you are going to be going down to pretty, you're going to be pretty slow. So the Federation can just overrun you. And one of the things that can happen, and as a Federation player, that depending upon the opponent, and more to the point, what the opponent's torpedoes are set to, how far they are, where they are in the arming cycle. And the arming cycle will define what you would do if your opponent would cloak. If your opponent would cloak, most probably what you're going to want to do is you're going to overrun them using your phasers, because the phasers are least affected by the EW shift. And if you can overrun them, then all you have to do, obviously you have the plus five, but at range zero, plus five is not that bad with phaser ones. And then obviously you have to, I'm assuming that you're not going to maintain, fire controlled lock on a cloak ship. There's a possibility that you can do, but if, worst case scenario, if your cloaked opponent is really desperate, they will do an emergency emergency deceleration because of they get those additional bonuses for going speed zero. And because that's normally what you would do as a cloaked opponent, what they would do is they toggle their speed. Right along the modification lines. The idea being that if you're unable to shake him, basically the person is able to maintain fire control lock on your ship, then if they're able to do that, then you're going to want to have another opportunity to break that lock. And that's normally what happens. So that's why you might actually have them go do an emergency deceleration as that last ditch effort, because of you don't want no Romulan wants to be under cloak all of the penalties of the cloak and still and then have someone overrun you, because you still have to be going pretty slow, because if you don't have to do the additional die rolls for each of the weapons that hit. Full damage, I think it's 5 to 6. Then 3/4 damage and 1/2 damage. I think that's right. It's been a while since I've actually had to use the chart. Of course, it's been, freaking flip. I can't remember the last time I've actually seen a Romulan or even an Orion. Actually, I have seen an Orion, but it's been so long. It's been a long time. Hey, Russ. It's been so long I've actually seen a Romulan or Orion actually cloak their ship. It's been a long time for me. The last time I actually fought an opponent who actually cloaked, that was against an Orion. And I forget. I think I was flying Andromeda against it, but I have a hard time believing that being an Orion against an Andromeda, you'd ever do that. So I remember it was Orion. It definitely was Orion. I just don't remember what I was flying at the time against it. My guess would have been either a Saltorian or a Wynn. The Black Shark. That would be my guess if I had to guess what ship I was flying at that time. But anyhow, getting back to the Federation tactics, and less about tactics against cloaked opponents. So obviously that's part of it. I think I would go with. Okay, there's two main strategies. And when it comes to the Federation, either you want to stay long range and hope to hit fully overloaded photons at a good distance. Hey, let's be honest here. If you go to range 8, which is a 50% chance of hitting for each and every photon, and you hit with all 4, your opponent is going to be in deep trouble. Now, obviously, 30 points of internals, a person could survive. Because of, it depends upon the ship. If it's like a Zinti, it can survive. If it's an Orion, it's going to have some troubles. It can probably survive, but it's going to be hurt really bad. And of course, the big issue there is just what shield is facing the Fed. What shield gets knocked down. If it's shield number 1, you got a good Yeah, you got a good lead on things, you know, just because of you are, they have to fight with avoiding shield number one, and so they have to fight through shield number two and shield number six, which in some cases is not too bad. If it's in the Hydran, that's bad, because everything goes out shield number one. But, now that's, you know, do that now. And then the other one is to wait for you get into closer range. And obviously this all depends on the opponent, because in theory, yes, you can get to range two of a plasma opponent. Obviously that might require some, let's put it this way, some damage to your ship. And then maybe take a few internals, and in that case you're rolling the die. Because of getting range two on with plasma player is really hard to do without actually, you know, basically running through a few plasma. But when you're flying against a plasma opponent, whether it's Romulan or Gorn, you're gonna have that difficulty of you have to have some patience. But of course, they have ultimate patience. They're always going for a longer term game. Well, most of the time, going for long term game. I remember one time I tried to do a really short game, i.e. I tried to tractor the guy and launch all my torps at him. Didn't quite tractor him, so, you know, put quite a bit of energy into it. Unfortunately, I failed. What I was hoping was that if I could snag him early and catch him off guard, I'd win the game quickly. Didn't quite work. Happens. There are sometimes you have to make the bold move, and there's sometimes stick to the plan. Don't go for the bold move. Stick to the plan. Good Lord knows, as you've heard from some of my adventures, that boldly going where I was going to say boldly going where no one's gone before, but that's not quite true. It's more along the lines of what's the saying? Can't remember. Going where angels fear to tread, you know, that kind of thing. But anyhow, so the thing is, in either case, actually, in the case of waiting for range two or closer to fire your photons, obviously, that's more of a patient game. That means what you're going to be doing is you're going to be using your phasers, which the good part about that phasers. great Russ. I can't wait to see them. See the redos. Russ is telling me about the videos he's doing, and I got to see how I'm going to add those to the podcast. I might just make them available for reference or something along those lines, because I think that'd be really cool. Maybe you know, if I, you know, make a video version, you know, upload it to YouTube and replace what the current version is, you know, introduce it into that and all that kind of thing. Which see if that can be done. You're crafty one, yeah. But anyhow, sorry, Russ, squirrel. But anyway, when it comes to the Federation, the big thing about the Federation is, of course, power. Now, if you're doing the whole range two or to try to do a really close attack, and that's where you're waiting for your photons, obviously you're going to be firing your phasers to whittle down your opponent. And in some cases, use the phasers purely for defensive. Now, that's what a Romulan or a Klingon or even a Zindi opponent wants you to do. They don't want you to fire your weapons at them. But Klingons are a little different because they have a scatter pack. But after the scatter pack, they just have two drones that can fire at you. So they can't really use up your phasers. And, of course, their drones are only speed 20. So as long as you don't try to recharge that photons, you'll be fine. But I'll get around to that in just a moment. So in that case, you're going to be doing a lot of running and gunning. Keep the idea of keeping your speed up, because that's the one benefit of not having to charge your photons, because, come on, let's be honest, photons are just energy hogs. They go, they'll slow you down like you won't believe, which makes things interesting. But anyway, in that case, you're going to be firing the phasers as your offensive weapon. And then hopefully, the idea, of course, like any non-hydrant, even the hydrogen, you should do this. That is, focus on one shield and try to just beat on that one shield. Beat on it, beat on it, beat on it. Will it always be possible? No. Now, this is always a gotcha. If you cannot penetrate the shield, or you can't get close enough to actually do at least some damage, do you want to actually use your phasers? Because obviously the big issue with firing your phasers and not getting internals or not using them in a defensive way, are you wasting energy? This is always one of those things that you're always going to have to review in your own mind, which is that if you fire a phaser today, you can't fire that same phaser. You have to recharge it tomorrow. You know, plain simple. Now, given that, most of the time, if you get to within range, within range 8, you're gonna want to fire your phaser once, and if you can get to range 5, without incurring much wrath from your opponent, which obviously if you get to range 5, they will be firing phasers at you. That's going to be the honest truth. So let's always keep that in mind. Now, obviously when it comes to the chuck and fire and then run away, that'll work sometimes. When it comes to playing the Fed, but that's a high risk game. Oh, cool! Great, Russ. That sounds like a great idea. Just sidetrack here for a moment for Russ. Russ says that, so the concept of his videos that he's pre-built a stack of short, less than 10 minutes videos of refresher videos on lesser used SMB concept rules systems, etc., that can be referenced by players that they know the material already. They can die under disruptors too. Yeah. Sorry, I got sidetracked by David. But and if you were watching the video, you can actually see the distraction, which is fun. That's all. But anyhow, so the longer distance is okay. Now here's always the issue with the longer distance. As a first initial attack run, that actually would probably work fine. It's the second attack run that gets hard, because here's always the issue. You are fighting in a freaking fishbowl. And given that you're fighting in a fishbowl, you're not going to go very, very far. You're going to be running around. Now, this is when energy management is everything. Because of, okay, the initial turn that you fire and run, you can run away. That's fine. Now, the one thing it's going to be hard to do is recharge and run away. You can do it, but here's the issue. To fully overload all four photons, and if you plan on doing the chuck kind of thing, in my mind, is you're going to want to do that. That's overall 32 points of power for all four. Yes, that's 32 points of power. That takes a minimum of two turns. Obviously, if you want to put it over more turns, you know, instead of using the two turns, you actually can put it over three or four turns. For example, you can actually just rearm your photons as standard photons. Because here's the great thing about photons. Photons are very flexible in the damage that you can do. You can actually do partial overloads. That's the beauty of photons, is that, okay, you have, now, that's also a downfall in my mind, is that, okay, if you overload even just one point, if it's a 9-point overload, yes, you can actually do that. Or even eight, in theory, I'm pretty sure you can do an 8.5-point overload. Why would you ever want to do that? I don't know. And that is, you'll be limited to range 8. Now, there's one tactic which I would recommend you never ever using, and that is proxies. Because proxies, they have to damage it down to 4 points, and they're off for long distance. Now, there's only one time I would ever, ever, ever contemplate to do it. And that is, basically, what happened was both of you decided to, I'm going to run away and repair my ship. And so you both decided to go on opposite ends of the board. This is the only time that I even contemplate a proxy photons. And that is when there's that great of a distance and you know you're going to get a down shield. That is the only time I would ever consider it. Or a very weak shield, as in like a 2-box shield. Something along those lines where you have a good opportunity. If you can increase the to hit for, you know, the to hit for hitting, you know, to hit for the photons, it would be worth it. Now, obviously, here's always the difficult part, and that is you do less damage, but your to hit is better. Now, in fleet battles, most of the time you're doing that is you're, what you want to do in that case is, what's the weapon system where you can basically tie your weapons to a single die roll? I know you can't use it in tournaments. They've been outlawed in tournaments way too much because the Federation will use it. So, that's the only time you'd ever want to use proxies. The big thing is you can charge your photons as standard charged photons, and then you can increase them to overloads. Now, the big thing here is going to be on how much speed you need. The more speed you need, the less you can actually charge your photons. And of course, as I said, they're eternally flexible. If you want to, you can charge all four at once. Most probably you're not going to want to do that. Most probably what you're going to want to do, because of invariably you're going to lose a photon. So you might want to charge one photon as standard, or two of your four photons as standard, and then charge the other two as overloads. You know, start with so that saves you 4 points of energy. I'm assuming you're doing a full overload. Thank you, David. Narasound, that's the one that I was thinking of, which has been not used in. Narasound, that's one thing that's been outlawed in tournaments. Big surprise. Way too many, you know, win losses, you know, big swing shifts, you know. It's kind of understandable because of the big thing about Narasalvos is that either you win or you lose. So it becomes a die roll. You know, less tactics, more just blind. Let's come in and fire. See, if I hit with all four, you die. Which means one die roll and you die. Yeah. No. And I think most players will not want that, but here's always the gotcha on saying stuff like that, and that is that invariably there's going to be somebody who's going to take advantage of it and say, okay, that's the way I want. I'm going to live or die by a single die roll, you know, and they'll make it work for them. So the key to playing the Fed is managing your photons, managing the charging in your photons. That, in my mind, is your critical factor, because the thing is, you've got quite a phaser array system. Obviously, if you're flying against plasma or drones, you can run into issues. Because if you're going to be using some of your some of your phasers to beat them down. And until they actually add a Type G rack on the Federation Tournament Cruiser, you have to use phasers. So with that, I think I'm going to discuss a little bit about hydrant tactics. Now, and obviously another thing with hydrants, just like the Federation, is that they've got some weapons which just take a lot of freaking energy. But things like, the fusion beams, they're single turn arming weapons, and you can hold them. That's the beauty of the fusion beams. But of course, one thing when it comes to the Hellbores can only be rolled. They cannot be overloaded and held. Which means you're always going to be putting the 3 points of energy into your Hellbores until they get knocked off. You know, things like that. But so when you do that, usually current thoughts on tactics when it comes to just using the Hellbores, yeah, Dave, I will definitely get into the fighters, because the fighters are a very Sandy Hemingway. Always calls those fighters as roving nuclear space mines. Real interesting. I agree, because Lord knows they can dish out a lot of damage. If they ever get to range zero, you're dead. You're dead. Actually, that's one thing I never use, which is close combat maneuvers. Never done that. Yeah. Agreed. Dave's saying the fighters drop the shields and ship weapons due to damage. I agree. But we'll get to that. But getting back to this, the Hellbores real quick. Most Hydran players I've ever seen fly the Hydran, they'll do the rolling, and then they might have one overloaded, which they use from batteries. The reason why they normally do that is because of you never can, for the most part, it's rare that you actually can guarantee that you actually will get into range 8. If you can guarantee into range 8 and your hellbores will be in arc, then obviously you can overload them both. But here's always the gotcha. Since to overload a hellbore, you have to put 6 points of energy into a hellbore versus 3. So instead of spending 6 points of energy, if you overload both hellbores, it's going to cost you 12 points of energy. And you only got 40 points of energy to begin with. So that leaves you only 28. Minus housekeeping is 24. Now, if you do nothing else, you charge nothing else, including fusions, you can go speed 24, which is really cool. But obviously, you're going to be charging or holding your fusions. And depending upon the tactical situation, you might actually want to overload your fusions. But that's a rare thing. Because normally, the whole idea of Hydran is it's the ultimate in hack and slash. You know? That is, come in and hit you close in with the fusions and the phasers, and then hellbores next turn, because then you'll have all the power. Or if you want, or even better, if you can, which is if you want to, obviously, since you're gonna be sitting still, you can hold back some of your, at least like two of your fusions, and then you can like overload them, or even you want to just for freaking giggles, if you want to suicide overload them. Now, obviously, the only time you ever do a suicide overload ever is when, and this is kind of obvious, but I'll state it anyway, which is for the final kill, where you need that instead of the 1.5 times the damage, twice the damage than a standard fusion. So that can change things greatly. Now, obviously, the issue with suicide overloading on fusions is it wrecks the fusion beam and you get additional eternals. That's why it's a rare thing that you do. Now, here is the beauty which David's pointed out, which is those lovely little things called fighters. Now, any opponent worth his salt is going to want to just knock your fighters down. Now, that's bad and that's good. The good aspect to that is that you know that your opponent's going to be using his phasers to fight them off. Basically, they are seeking weapons, but they're even better seeking weapons than normal seeking weapons. Why are they better? That's because of they are manned. Therefore, they can go anywhere you want them to go. Unlike a drone or a plasma, where you must go towards the opponent, the fusion fighter, the fighters don't have to do that. You can have them so they come up behind the ship, or you can have it so they, cut the ship off. Because here's the great part about that, and that is, and I've experienced this firsthand, where the got striked by my cat, but anyway. That the Hydran ship can go in the middle of the board and keep you running on the outside, because invariably you don't want to get too close to the Hydran, because not just the hellbore, not just the fusion, but then you have the phaser G's. Thank you very much. That's possible. Dave's mentioning that sling T-bombs at the fighters to catch a few and dummy bombs to break up the formation. In theory, yes, you can do that when it comes to fleet battles, but for tournaments, only two people that actually have T-bombs. You have the Andromeda, who actually can transport out a T-bomb, and then, you have the Romulan KE, which actually can drop the T-bomb out the hatch as a replacement for the NSM. Lame. But that allows the fighters to get close and basically force the person to stay up against the wall. So that, because Lord knows you don't want to be facing those phasers, the fighters. So you're going to be running away from them too. Especially if you're on your charging turn. You can use phasers to knock them down, but before you do that, they're going to get to range 3 at minimum. And if they're able to get to range 3, what are they going to do? They're going to probably use double charges of their fusions and use that and use the phaser Gs to fire on your ship and probably wreck one of your shields. And then you have the Hellbore come in behind it, and depending upon if you've positioned the fighters properly, you can have it so that the fighters hit the rear shield, and the Hydra can come in behind it as he's chasing the opponent. You can then fire some more phasers at longer range, knock it down even further, and then fire the Hellbores. Now, the biggest issue for the Hydra is Mizzia attack. This is one of those things that as a hydrant, you need to be careful, because of the biggest thing about the hydrants is that they have every single weapon type, basically, when it comes to damage control. Damage allocation. You've got your phasers, you've got your drones, and you've got your torps. The torps are the fusions, which you don't mind losing. But the drones, those are your two Hellbores. That's why if you've ever seen an Orion player, what they'll do, if they ever get a Hellbore, is they'll want to put at least one drone rack on the ship to protect the Hellbores from actually being blown off the ship. Actually, if you think about that a little bit, when it comes to damage allocation and the whole idea of controlling what actually gets damaged, it's really insane, to be honest. Because of, in theory, in a real life scenario, you have no way of controlling what actually gets damaged, except for positioning on the ship. And that, so this side of the ship or this side of the ship is facing the opponent, in which case those weapons will most likely be destroyed. Or have a greater chance of being destroyed. But that's not here or there at the moment. I know that sometimes that's one of the most difficult things to do is avoiding the Mizzia. Because of they're looking for the Mizzia and you're trying to avoid it. Which means as soon as they get a shield down and they're facing you and they still have weapons, they're gonna just plink you and do their best to knock down as much weapons as possible. Mainly the weapons they're looking for is the Hellbores, because in theory the Hydra can fight without its Hellbores, but it makes it a lot more difficult because of each Hellbore can do 30 points of damage. Dave's mentioned that Hydra have a thick turn hull so they can afford Mizzia. Well, the Mizzia is not, you don't have, issues with the other systems. The issue you have with Amnesia is with your weapon systems. That is the issue. Because let's say try to do a Amnesia attack. There you can do it on a Saltorian. What are you gonna hit? You've got your particle cannons, and you've got your web crackers, and you've got your phasers. If someone knocks out your web crackers, are you gonna get upset? Not really. The particle cannons, yeah, it's gonna be a heck of annoying. Fortunately, they have they're easily repaired. Versus the Hellbores. Hellbores are 25 points of repair points to repair a single Hellbore. And you can't even do a fast repair on a Hellbore, like on a Disruptor or even a particle cannon. So that's why I think Amnesia is, it's a death knell to the Hydrogen. If your opponent is able to successfully to execute an Amnesia attack, well, it's not guaranteed because of obviously it relies on die rolls, and die rolls are finicky. They could be doing an Amnesia attack, but in that Amnesia attack, they would fail when it comes to the internals. They roll poorly. Now, so obviously, well, the Hydra wants like two engagements that are really close range. The biggest, obviously, when it comes to someone fighting against the Hydra, what's the one thing that they're going to do? They're going to be actually launch. They're going to try to keep the Hydra away because of the closer in, the better off of those Hellbores hitting, and those Hellbores can be quite nasty because of that one terrifying feature of it, which is it will hit your weakest shield. Now, obviously, the one thing that with the whole weakest shield thing is that you try to balance your shields. That's not always possible, and I understand that. As a person fighting a Hydran, and that's what the Hydran wants. And that's what we're talking about, is Hydran tactics, so that Hydran can win. But also, obviously, we have to discuss the opponent's tactics, because that's what they're going. That's their counter to your tactics. And one thing to always keep in mind is the Hydran and its suicides. Keep that in great mind. And here's why. That is that you have two launching tubes. Actually, you only have two launching tubes, you have two shuttle bays. Since you have two shuttle bays, you can launch two suicide shuttles at once. Because I'm pretty sure it's two shuttle bays. I'd have to double check on the rules, but I'm pretty sure that they're two shuttle bays. I know that it's been a while. But okay. Hold on. I'm just wondering. There it is. Okay, just give me a sec here. And I've got the Zennies, Gorn, and Tholian. Orion. Hydrogen, there it is. Yep, two shuttle bays. which means that given there are two shuttle bays, you can actually launch two suicide shuttles at once at your opponent if you have them tractored. So close in, the Hydrogen can just be an absolute nightmare, especially if you can do the whole crap. Using a tractor beam to grab your opponent. I forget what that tactic is called. Sorry, it's. But basically, if you get to tractor your opponent and keep them nice and close, so they don't go anywhere, you can just pummel your opponent, especially if you have the suicide shuttles charged. And be honest, if you're fighting against a plasma or a drone, I would still have the suicides charged, and you might also charge wild weasels. Obviously, it's a balance thing, because Lord knows the last fight I did, which was the Romulan Firehawk against the LDR, and that is that I had the suicide shells, which I kept on. I held for like 8 turns until I actually got to use them. And the question I always come into my mind is, was it worth it to actually hold them? Because invariably, what did he do at the end? He knocked them out of the sky. But of course, would he have ignored them? Probably, if they wouldn't have been suicides, because he did do some IDing on that. So, not sure. And of course, you never know when that opportunity is going to arrive where you actually can use your suicide shuttles. So that's kind of what you do with suicide shuttles, is that you're rolling the dice on that you'll actually be able to use them in the game. To a certain degree, obviously, you want to have a plan for it, but at the same time, your opponent needs to give you the opportunity to get that close. You know, overall, yeah, yes, you can pin the guy against the wall and do it that way, but depending upon the ship you're flying, you know. Hydrogen, yeah, you want to do that. You want to slam them against the wall and just kill them that way, especially with the fighters which were mentioned earlier. But you know, and that's one of the few times you actually will be able to do a suicide shuttles. You know, it's in the Hydrogen. And I think we'll cover the Hydrogens pretty well, because of the way I see it. The big key there is to, especially if you're fighting against opponent in the Hydrogen that does not have seeking weapons, especially plasma, you know. Chasing him down and then launching the fighters is a great way. Now, I know some people I've seen do this, which is what they'll do is they will launch their fighters, tractor their fighters. The idea is to keep the fighters close by so that basically you have two additional phaser Gs and 4 additional fusion, which you talk about adding power, you know, firepower to a ship. That's one way of doing it. But most of the time, the reason why you do that is you're doing it for defense against plasmas. So you have those additional Gatling phasers. And since the fighters, those phaser Gs are actually 300, I'm pretty sure 360, then, you know, they're a lot better off than the left side, right side phaser Gs that are actually on the ship. So, obviously, you know, for a plasma, a opponent, you'd be chasing them on the off turn. And try to pin them against the wall like I described earlier. And especially, you want to keep it. Here's always the gotcha when it comes to plasma versus against the hydrant, which is as a hydrant, and if you have your opponent launching the plasmas at you, the question is, do you run through them or do you run away from them and concede the middle of the board to your opponent? Most times, if you can avoid it, you want to avoid it. Because of the whole idea is controlling where you are on the board and always being ready for an attack, for attacking. Because of what happens with the plasma player is that they have to, at some point, they have to run away just because of they can't keep up a constant stream of plasma. Best case scenario, they can launch like a 30 and a 20. You know, S and an F, two turns in a row, then one F. And then again, one S and one F on the fourth turn. And then, you know, an S and F on the fifth turn. And then, well, actually, the problem is if they launch the plasma Fs on that third turn, turn three, that means at that point, they no longer have their plasmas charged for the upcoming launching. So that's why it's always that's the opportunities that would be fantastic is on those turns where they don't have the heavy plasmas available. So you can actually come in on those. But obviously you have to plan that. And when it comes to drones, not much question there. In my mind, if you're a hydrant and you're flying against drones, you don't even bother charging wild weasels. There's no reason for it. You can run out the drones and you've got the phasers to knock them down. So there's no reason to concede the board to a bunch of drones. Okay, well, with that, I think we will wrap it up for this evening. Had a nice little discussion about both Federation and Hydrant tactics. And obviously, if you disagree, please feel free to email me at sfuoncall@gmail.com. Also, if you want to, obviously, show up, and I'd be happy to discuss tactics with you. I'm more than happy. Next week, we'll see. Maybe we'll have another tactics, or we'll discuss something else. One thing that I'm looking into doing, just to let you know, is that I'm looking into actually, instead of live streaming just the chat room, see if I can get my face, you know, like in a little itty bitty box. But to do that, I have to set up a video camera because currently I don't have. I've got a laptop which has a camera, but my laptop is in clamshell mode. So I can't use that, and I don't have enough space here to actually set up the laptop and my big monitor at the same time. So we'll just have to wait and see how I can do that. So I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.